The question isn't who is going to let me, it's who is going to stop me and run. That is our quote of the day as we begin this edition of Today's Woman on Foundation Radio. Julius Dendong is behind the dashboard. He's going to be technically assisting us throughout the program today, and myself, Ranibel Sato Wara, as the presenter of the program. When we come back, we discover who is our guest. Welcome back, dear listeners, on Today's Woman on Foundation Radio. It is always a pleasure having you on the program. You know, we always talk about women and their challenges, women and how much they are devoting to society and how better they can serve their community, their nation, and equally the world. And on today's edition of the program, we have as guest Mrs. Kieng Mercy Tetu. She is an epidemiologist. She is the CEO of Value Health Africa. She is equally a member of the 2016 Mandela Washington Fellowship, and she is a one-time lab director at Ringland Medical. She is equally a one-time lecturer at Florence Nightingale Medical Institute. She is a researcher, and she is the program coordinator of Build a Women Cameroon, and she is right here with us. She will be staying with us throughout this 1 hour we have together, and she equally has so much in store that we shall be hearing, learning, and equally improving on our opinion and our stay. Well, you're welcome to the program, Kieng Mercy.
Thank you, Miss Vanibel.
We are going to be looking at your road to begin with. We'll be looking at your road to the level where you are today, maybe education-wise, maybe how you were able to start Value Health Africa. Yeah. I don't know if you started or you were appointed CEO, but then we just want to get your road to your success.
Well, thank you. It's quite a journey. It's been a journey, a very long journey. And I don't know where to start from, but I will start from somewhere. Actually, I've never been privileged to be in, I put it in quotes, the best schools in the world. Like, you know, from my primary education, I've been in community schools where it was almost free in those days. I remember in my primary schools, we never even had benches. We learned under trees, and we never even had windows. We never had, you know, it was just built out of mud block in a faraway village somewhere around the southwest region.
Okay.
And along, you know, throughout, it hasn't been really, really easy, you know, coming from a home where we were really, really struggling, you know. There were a lot of hurdles, a lot of, you know, challenges, you know, and at one point it was like, you know, you should give up because things were not really the way you could see amongst your peers, you know. So my journey hasn't been that smooth. Yeah. After my primary school, I left, came to Bamenda, and continued with my secondary education at GBHS Bamenda, where I had my ordinary levels, and then pursued my advanced levels in sciences. Then I left the University of Boya, where I studied microbiology and a minor in medical lab technology. And I decided to pursue a master's degree after working in the laboratory for some time in epidemiology in the Catholic University of Central Africa. Yeah, I think that was an eye-opener for me.
Okay.
Yeah, during my master's studies, my eyes were really open to the world. And then I started identifying problems, I mean, crucial problems that Cameroon had. Yeah. And I remember this story when I was in school. A friend told me, a friend usually comes late to school, and I would ask her, why is it that you always come? You don't even, there were some days that she never really attended classes, and I would ask her, why weren't you in class on this day? And she would tell me, you know, I had to take my father to the dialysis center, you know. And I began so interested in how the whole thing operates, and she would tell me she has to wait for over 4 hours to get her father in the machine and out. You know, during that period, she had to stay off from school, carry her dad back home, and she told me it's been hell, you know. And at one point, the dad couldn't even manage his institution and had to sell it out because of all that, because of that crisis. Yeah, yeah. So I was so passionate about this, and I was like, you know what? I have to take this as a research topic to really get the root cause of this problem, and also see the disease distribution in even in Bamenda. Because if you could go through this problem, this challenge in a very big city like Yaoundé, then I can imagine other communities, you know. So when I came back to Bamenda, I decided to carry out the research on this problem entitled "The Epidemiology of End Stage of Impaired Renal Disease in Bamenda." Mm-hmm. When I realized. I went to communities, and actually we did a baseline survey, after which we came up with our statistics and analyzed, and we actually discovered some of the risk factors associated to these diseases, which were high blood pressure, we had diabetes, we had obesity, and mm-hmm. all that. And I spoke to myself, what it's been done to arrest this root cause. Then I realized I was a solution to this problem. I decided to initiate Value Health Africa to now fight this root cause, rather than us waiting for people to progress to the end stage phase before now bringing in management schemes that are usually not sustainable. That's why we have the dialysis centers everywhere breaking down, mm-hmm. because it's not sustainable. And I decided to come up with this this initiative to educate the population on some of these risk factors, to educate the population on early diagnosis and all that. That's actually Value Health Africa now. Yeah. That has been my journey so far.
Okay. Mm. Well, quite interesting. Now, there's an event coming up organized by Value Health Africa. Yeah. Can you tell us more about that occasion?
Yeah, there's an event coming up, and Value Health Africa is a partner to this event. We have the Joanna Briggs Foundation, which is one of the organizing organizations. Mm-hmm. We have Cameroon Center for Evidence-Based Health. That's also the part of the organizing team. And this the theme of this program is Women in Evidence Awareness Raising Research Training Workshop. And Women in Evidence Awareness Raising Research is this workshop is all about raising the next generation of women who can come up with research that's need-based research and provide evidence, you know, for policymakers to adopt better policies in Cameroon.
Okay.
Because we realize that in the past years, women have always been the back. And if you look at the train in which the world is progressing to, they want to incorporate so many more women in leadership positions. And that's how we see gender equality and all that. But then if we put these women to lead without giving them the skills to come up with evidence-based research, you know, for the adoption of better policies, I don't think we are doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. So women, and a point of many women don't have that interest conducting research, you know, need-based research. I don't know why, but we are still looking at arresting that issue. So this research is all about bringing up women to capacitate them so that they can take, you know, even if they are policymakers, mm-hmm. they could adopt better policies, you know,
so
in their leadership.
It's not only about women in health.
Yeah, women in social sciences, so yeah.
Okay.
Take for instance, we have anthropologists, we have sociologists, and all that. Mm-hmm. We want people to carry out good research.
Okay.
Yeah, community research that we can put up to the policymakers. Like, okay, this percentage of women are being marginalized. and these are the associated risk factors to this problem. Mm-hmm. You know, they should talk with that scientific know-how. You know, it shouldn't just be like, you know, women are being marginalized. I went to this school and I saw two women that have been, you know, mm-hmm. No, it doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. We need that evidence. We need research, with statistics, scientific, you know, that scientific knowledge, you know, and language on it. So we want to capacitate women to use the scientific tools to mm-hmm. come up with good papers.
Okay. Yeah. And when is that going to take place?
It's going to be on the 16th. It's a 2-day workshop.
All right.
Yeah. It's going to be from the 18th, sorry, to the 19th of November. Okay. At the State Registered Nursing Training School, just below the Bamenda Regional Hospital.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we are calling on all women out there to seize the opportunity.
Yes.
And get to discover what they are talking about.
Yeah.
I believe women really need to sit up, to be encouraged to, for example, do research, bring out evidence.
Yeah.
And as you said a while ago, we cannot encourage women to take part in leadership when they are not equipped, when they are not fully equipped to handle such posts of responsibility. So the women should seize the opportunity and go to that workshop.
And secondly, let me just add to this. If women develop their skills and engage in evidence for decision making, there's an increased likelihood that they will be motivated to use evidence to inform their decisions as leaders, managers, governors, and policymakers. There is a likelihood for this to come in if they embark on this. Mm-hmm. And they'll be able to differentiate between issues that are crucial and issues that are not. Because more often, people now address issues based on what they feel,
yeah,
not based on what is happening on the ground, mm-hmm. or based on their interest. Mm-hmm. That's why you see some things that we see that we based on research or what we have done, that is a crucial issue. It's not being looked into, but because this policymakers are not informed mm-hmm.
They don't have the right facts.
They don't have the right facts. They take decisions based on their instincts,
mm-hmm.
and the repercussions falls back on the country. Mm-hmm. So we want women who are taking that leadership role to be informed on the skills. They should have the tools mm-hmm. to be able to dictate which one is a priority, mm-hmm. you know. And that's what we want to do.
Okay. That's great. Now let's talk about some of the challenges you have faced trying to set up Value Health Africa, being a woman, and maybe how you were able to overcome such challenges.
Yeah, it's a big one. I think I have had so many challenges, given that my team is made up of PhD holders. We have so many doctors. We have, you know, people who are really, you know, more advanced than I am, yeah. But I'm the CEO. Mm-hmm. I'm the chief executive officer, and I have to work with us, you know, with these knowledgeable people.
Mm-hmm.
It's not
been
easy. Men and women, you know, okay. for you to tell a man to submit your report and all that. It's you know, given the gender gap we still have,
mm-hmm.
it's not really as easy as thing. So I have some of these challenges, and going to the community to talk to men on health issues too, for men to sit down, listen to, you know, mm-hmm. from me and all that. It's at times it's like I'll hear them from the background say, look, this small girl, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Imagine.
So and I remember going to one community and one man told me, you know, you're a woman, and you know, you have your husband, just leave this whole thing, go meet that man, have kids, and stay in your house.
Take
care of your home, or you lose that man to another woman, you know. And those are some of the challenges I've been having. And I've even had my friends who are girls walk up to me and tell me, this kind of work is not for a woman
mm-hmm.
to handle. You know, you should make sure you are always there in your home, and, you know, to keep your home, to mm-hmm. keep your man. There's still that notion of mm-hmm. keeping your man by being in the home and make sure, you know. So some of these challenges, you even have some mothers walk up to you to talk to you on that, that you are too mobile and all that.
And so how have you been able to balance everything with your family?
Yeah, they say walking without playing makes Jack a dull boy.
Messy a dull girl,
yeah, that's right. And I've been, even though it's not been so easy, but I've been struggling to strike a balance, making sure even if I return home in the evening, the night, I cook and I get things ready in the evenings. Yeah. To make it clear, house chores are not meant just for women. My husband wakes up, helps me out. We put things together. Both of us rush for work. So it's high time men started thinking that they are also part of making the home successful. Yes. So they should give a hand to enable their women achieve out there. So I think my husband also has been very supportive and has been very understanding, even in my mobility and all that. So I think that's,
I'm sure most women will say you are the lucky type. You have a good man. Let's take for the instance where you not have a supportive man.
Yeah,
the man who wants you to always get his meals ready when he wants them, get his dresses when he wants them clean, and all of that. So what can you say if somebody should have passion and should have the drive to do something for their own community and they are limited one way or another by their husband?
To be candid, gender educators have failed in this, in that we bring these women together and talk to them on women empowerment. Looking at society today, when these women return home, they still face the limitations back home because the men are the ones limiting these women. So if we're talking about gender equality, gender equity and all that, these men have to be incorporated in the education process.
Certainly.
And it's rather very difficult to change things when you're already in the home. But I think as a woman, as a young girl, before you get married, these are things you should discuss with a boy. When you guys are fiancés, you should not be discussing only on the number of kids you want to have, how the honeymoon will look like. Put your goals on the table. Talk them out. This is what I want to do. You know, before I got married, I made my husband understand the kind of woman I would be.
Yeah.
So when we got home, it wasn't any surprise to him any longer. But many women they fail to tell this man. So when they get home now, they want to start looking up and moving head-to-skate, and the man like, no, this is not the woman I intended getting married to. You get it? This is not the woman I knew. Because you never put your goals, you never align them before him. Like, this is what I want to do. So all of these things should be discussed prior to getting married to your husband, so that your partner knows
the kind of woman he's, are. He's,
yeah.
Yeah. He, and so I think even pastors are emphasizing on the importance of courtship, because as you are saying, it's really during courtship that you can set your goals, you can make your husband know that he's not married to maybe one woman who is just the reserve type, who is just the kitchen type. Yeah. Obviously, we always say women have some kind of greater responsibility because they have to work and they have to take care of their homes. So eventually men should know that they should their wives should be able to balance both. Because these days we hear many men saying they want to equally get married to women who can support or contribute one way or another. And so they are, in another way, saying the one equally women who are working. So we want to say that women equally should not just stay at home, eat all of the money that the man brings home, and lay around idly in the house, gossiping around the quarter. So talking about some of the challenges you usually face on the field, you know, many of us, we face that too. Even me as a journalist, at times people would say, why should you bother so much about going the extra mile? I mean, where will you end with all of this? How have you been able to cope or to overcome such challenges?
Okay, I think that's a good one. There was this man I met in the community who asked me this very funny question, like, why are you so concerned I asked that, I turned to him and asked him, in Africa, take for instance, I'm working on non-communicable diseases, and in Africa it's been proven that 1 in 3 persons have high blood pressure, 1 in 3 adults. I turned and asked him, should it be your daughter who is in a community somewhere and doesn't even know and needs a messenger like me to inform her so as to preserve her life? Won't you send her? Won't you send me?
Mm-hmm.
He was like, yes, I will send you. I said, fine. That's the passion I have, to save as many people as possible. Because I believe it mustn't be somebody I don't know. It could be my mom. It could be my dad. It could be my brother. It could be my sister.
Mm-hmm.
So the community itself, the fact that I am in a community, gives me that passion to go an extra mile.
Mm-hmm.
Because Africa, we have that community lifestyle. Yeah. Your neighbor is your brother. You get it. And that's enough drive to keep me fighting.
Mm-hmm. And now, have there been any cases in health, or throughout your experience in health, have you ever witnessed some patients preferring male doctors to care for them than women doctors? Or have there been some particular diseases that men, that we can say only men can handle?
Looking at that gender issue, I have women. But before I get to that question, there was this observation I have. Most people who hail men mm-hmm. are women.
Okay.
On the contrary, they are women. If you see a woman who says, I don't want a female gynecologist to see me or to consult me,
mm-hmm.
I want a male gynecologist, it will be a woman.
Okay.
90% will be women as opposed to the men. So women already have this stereotype, men, they are already stereotyped, and they think in their own way. Take for instance, when I was in a bingo, because I had my son in bingo, I overheard my mom say,
mm-hmm.
there's this man who delivers so well, and I prefer him to work on you to any other person.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she was looking for the man. Like, if I meet this man, I'll be very happy because I believe in him. Because he's a man.
Okay.
So, I was like, but there are other women who are doing this thing, mm-hmm. and they're doing it so well. Why should you be so focused on a man? But they believe that men have that physical capacity to handle everything.
They have like extra expertise.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, like when we were growing up, we believed that our fathers could beat everybody.
Yeah.
But we have women that can really hold men and trash them real good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but we just have that confidence in our fathers. And I think we have to start reasoning different.
Mm-hmm. It's not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing.
But then
though,
we just hope that women too can be given such confidence. Yeah, they can be trusted because
excellent.
They are able.
Yeah. So I've seen that severally, and even the area of research, we are still struggling to, you know, push through and tell many women research and publication is meant both for men and women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but there's that you know, that ideology that men should push and do it, you know.
Yeah.
So,
well, I believe we are working our way up.
Yeah.
And certainly
we'll get there.
No distant time will equally be regarded as such.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Mercy, we are going to take a break, a musical break first. And when we come back, we continue with our discussions.
Okay. Thank you.
From afar, she just a shine like a morning light. I can see very clear, she just a shine in a broad daylight. And she was walking, and I was watching every step and the move she was making. She is adoring, I am admiring. her hips and her curves. Beauty is a natural thing, original thing and a mysterious thing. Raise up my voice and sing, I thank the Lord for a beauty queen. Cause your black is beautiful,
beauty from my bone.
Baby, your black is beautiful, baby, more
beauty in all your eyes.
And your black is beautiful, black is beautiful. Your black is natural, black is original. Oh, 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 yo, 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 mama, no. Che, che, che. She is black, she is proud and she knows it. She is cool and everybody likes it. She is bold and she's very, very humble. She is strong and can never, never fumble. She is courageous, a Sagittarius. The kind of woman I can take so serious. She's got the fire in her eyes that when you look at her, you will realize. Beauty is a natural thing, original thing and a mysterious thing. Raise up my voice and sing, I thank the Lord for a beauty queen. Cause your black is beautiful, baby, your black is beautiful, baby, more than
you know your guys.
And your black is beautiful, black is beautiful. And your black is natural, mama,
beauty in disguise.
And your black is Africa, your black is Jamaica. And your black is Caribbean, your black is America. And your black is Nigeria, your black is beautiful.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You are still on Foundation Radio and the program ongoing is Today's Woman. We're talking about women and how successful they are becoming and how much they are contributing to the growth of the society. And Mercy, we compiled a report about women in leadership. And we are going to listen to it together. We look at some of the challenges that women face in leadership positions. And when we come back, we equally see how you were able to participate or take part in some leadership positions in your life. Let's listen together.
Beginning with the meaning of leadership can give a clearer understanding of why most see women in leadership positions as a challenging issue and at times impossible. Put in dictionary terms, leadership is the ability to lead, guide, direct or influence others. All these attributes are equally embedded in women, meaning they too can very well take up and better manage leadership duties. Some reports have even revealed that some women can make better leaders than some men, given that women are more likely to listen, motivate, manage, nurture and stimulate personal growth as well as handle multiple tasks naturally endowed on them by God. This is mostly seen in the management of their homes, children, resources, family crisis, and other things. Dr. Bernard Bars, who developed the current theory of transformational leadership, revealed since 2010 that in the future, women leaders will dominate simply because they are better suited to 21st century leadership and management than men are. Despite all these revelations, most of the female folk still face so many challenges when it comes to accepting and occupying leadership positions, especially in Africa. The community still believes at times that women can't deliver proper services because their minds and attention are divided between their job and families. At times, they are even criticized for dedicating much time and effort on their jobs. This has made the timid women resent limelight positions and activities. Marriage and family matters have equally greatly contributed in limiting passionate women from becoming leaders. Some family heads and members say women should focus and pay more attention in the management of their homes and husbands. Since the Bible outrightly puts the man as the head of the family, most women, even after much struggle, eventually yield to the demands of their husbands. Despite all these challenges and evidence of how much some women are contributing in the growth of their families and communities, many women are now beefing up the challenge and asserting themselves against such cultural and gender barriers. Many more women are becoming entrepreneurs, getting into politics, and pioneering and leading change movements and activities that all contribute to the growth and development of their society. Several reports and analyses have proven that women can play a pivotal role in the development of every society and so should be encouraged and educated or empowered to take part in leadership and development activities in every given sphere and country.
Well, Mercy, we've just heard that report, and it's mostly talking about women who face difficulty in taking up leadership positions because of how community perceive them because of their duties at home. I don't know, according to you, are there some different challenges you think women face in leadership positions?
Obviously, yes, I think so. We have so many challenges, and we are still trying, even as a nation, to overcome some of these challenges. You know, we still have to build that confidence in women when it comes to taking up leadership positions. I've had so many leadership positions so far. I've been a laboratory director, I've been a lecturer, I'm presently a CEO, and I'm also a coordinator and all that. And it's really, really, really challenging given our God-given duties as a woman to, you know, conceive and go through the 9 months issue and being the wife and all that. It's a lot. It's a lot. I tell you, it's a lot. And given these God-given duties, at times it keeps you, it restrains you, or it keeps you at the back. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because during that pregnancy period, I cannot board a bike for a community to reach out, but a man will keep on doing that.
Every time, but
that's already part. It already plays, you know, on my leadership role. I have to stay back, you know, and give room for some other person to do the job. And secondly, I realized that even in homes, I've witnessed homes where men would tell the woman, "You can only be this. You cannot get to the next stage,
exceed
and be the leader, because you will come back home and will not respect me." I had so many people tell my husband that. Like, "Your wife is taking on these positions and you just watch her do it. You know, she will come back and certainly won't respect you." But I thank God, because he is that kind of man who believes in me. He has that confidence and that trust, and he'll reach for me to go higher.
There was a guest on the program one time. She said behind every successful woman there's even a more successful man. So a woman can excel only depending on how much her husband believes or permits her to exceed. So if you look at all of the women who are achieving or doing some great things, their men or their husbands are the supportive type. Because as long as a man will limit you, then I wonder how far you can go.
On the contrary, I've met women who actually have broken those barriers, those home-built barriers. Even though at times it comes with you have to trade your home, your family, to be able to get through, to push through. But there are women who have actually broken some of those barriers, even, you know,
the excessive barriers,
and are pushing through in life, and they are icons today. So I think, but it's very, very challenging if you have to maintain your home and be the kind of leader you want to, then your husband has to be very supportive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, you were equally a member of the Mandela Washington Fellowship,
yeah.
The 2016 badge.
Yeah,
yeah. And they certainly trained you on so many leadership issues and qualities. Now, coming from that backdrop, I think you should have some experience or some leadership qualities that have again been impacted on you. So are there some of those leadership qualities that you would like to share with some women listening?
Yeah, I learned this and it really humbled me. Before I left, I knew, you know, the leader, you're a leader when you're in a position and you have people whom you lead and all that. But my mentality about leadership has changed. Leadership is actually an activity. What are you doing as a leader? You should, there was that activity, that hands-on something that you should be doing. And that's what gives you that title as a leader. There should be that initiative you're taking. Even if you don't yet have people you're working with, in as much as you taking that initiative and you're doing it, subsequently you have people who come with you and carry on that initiative. So I think leadership now is more of an activity.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't wait to be appointed the director or the subsection president or the CEO or whatever. What is it that you're fixing that has been there unfixed?
Mm-hmm.
What is it that you're mending that had been torn? You know, so it's an activity. And I'm telling women out there, put your hands on something. Get something fixed in your community.
Mm-hmm.
Initiate something. Get something done. We shouldn't wait for Yaounde to pass on a decree for us to start fixing our communities. We are the change we are looking for. We are the ones to fix them. And believe me, when a woman puts her hand on something, I think we have tenfold blessings from God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it works. It works. Value Health Africa, for instance, has not been existing for so long. But people marvel at the caliber of projects we've pulled up.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, we are even carrying up, I'm initiating the project called Diabetes Clinic for All, where we install diabetes clinics in all health facilities in Northwest region.
Wow.
So this World Diabetes Day will be at Mendakwe installing a diabetic clinic. So that's just something I'm fixing. And before I started, I never had funds.
Mm-hmm.
But I utilized the local resources around me. We have people that are willing to give, but they want to give for the right cause.
Mm-hmm.
You write appeal letters to them. They support. They give in their own little way. You know, and we started fixing the communities before even the U.S. government is joining me on this fight.
Mm-hmm.
So you shouldn't wait to be appointed to fix. No, you shouldn't wait to be a minister to be able to bring up policies that will fix. No, it starts from grassroots research.
Yeah.
Then from there, you take it up and up and up and up. Before you know it, your voice has been heard.
Mm-hmm.
So women should not wait to be titled leaders, but they should. Engage themselves in fixing a problem.
Mm-hmm. And now we usually know every individual who has focus should have something like a driving force, something that is pushing you to do the things that you do, that is an inspiration or that is making you want to do more of what you want to do. So do you have a driving force?
Okay. When I was growing up as a little girl, I said to myself, I don't just want to get married, have children.
Mm-hmm.
Build a house, drive in a good car, but I wanted to give more. I wanted to be more. I wanted to do more to my community. So my inspiration had been from childhood. And looking at my surroundings, my father had children, he had a wife, we had a house. But he wasn't really satisfied or accomplished, didn't feel accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not all about having a house, having a car, having money that makes you feel accomplished, but giving back to your community. So I had that urge within me that looking at the life I'd gone through from childhood, looking at my sufferings,
mm-hmm.
I asked myself, in what way could I better off the people coming behind? In what way could I that affect a last long, a long lasting change, you know, a sustainable change that people will come behind could see those footprints. I wanted to leave a footprint. Wow. That generations could find and see that a girl existed and actually put up this, so we could also do this to better up our community. I wanted to be an example for others who are coming behind. So that has been my drive. That has been the force that has been keeping me going. Like, mm-hmm. Mercy, is this all you want to do for Cameroon? I keep asking myself that question. And each day when I put up my accomplishments, I'm like, I have to do more. This is another problem coming up. Mm-hmm. You have to fix it. You have to fix here, you have to fix there. So this has been my push, mm-hmm. to make sure that Cameroon becomes a sustainable nation,
yeah.
that others could look
now as a health expert, we will seize the opportunity to talk about some particular health challenges or limitations that women face. For example, what women cannot do, especially when they are pregnant, and obesity is equally one of the challenges that women face.
Yeah.
So talking to a health expert, some of the limitations that women face.
Yeah, as an epidemiologist carrying out community health research work as a routine for my life, I realized that obesity is one of the challenges women face. You know, amongst the percentages of people that we screened and realized they were obese, women formed 65% of that population. And the reason being that most women are sedentary. They have that sedentary lifestyle. They don't move, they don't go out. If a woman goes to school, maybe she has a 2-hour lecture, she comes and sits back home. Mm-hmm. On the same spot. Maybe the man has to go out, look for money here and there, move her basket, and stress a bit and all that, and it keeps them in shape. Yeah, keep them fit. But women now practice a lot of sedentary lifestyle, and that is a risk factor to women. Women should go out there, exercise themselves. Sport mm-hmm. is not meant only. Physical activity is not meant just for men. Women should do it more because their hormones are already keeping them at risk. For instance, if after birth, you know, some of these hormones that have been secreted, they increase the woman's risk of gaining weight. Mm-hmm. You know, and if a woman doesn't fight, I mean, 2 times harder than a man would, they will obviously progress to obesity. So some of the, you know, by birth, from creation, women are at risk of being obese. So incorporating sedentary lifestyle again increases the risk double-fold.
Mm-hmm. So it means encouraging women to take part or get out and work is not only for empowerment sake,
yeah.
but to keep them fit as well.
To keep them fit, yeah, that's right.
Okay, now looking at pregnancy, for example, with the recent, with the tragic incident that happened in Ezeka, you know, they launched a blood donation campaign, but then they said, the health experts said women, pregnant women cannot donate, breastfeeding moms cannot donate. There are some certain activities that women cannot do.
Yeah.
Like you said a while ago, they cannot board a bike to go to communities.
When you are pregnant.
So are there some health challenges that are limited, women are limited because of pregnancy?
Yes, of course, when a woman is pregnant, the end result is that during birth, a woman has to lose so much blood. And if a woman donates blood, when we are struggling to preserve that blood in your system, then at the end of the day, when you lose the blood during birth, what becomes of you?
Mm-hmm.
You run into blood shortage, which is so risky. So many women have lost their lives as a result of excessive bleeding during birth.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually so risky telling a pregnant woman to donate her blood.
Yeah, because we're looking at a situation where a pregnant woman can see her husband dying and urgently needs blood, but then maybe her situation will limit her.
Yeah, a woman has 2 persons. A pregnant woman has a child and herself. So looking at 2 individuals to 1 person you're struggling, you're trying to save. Meanwhile, maybe at one point the man's life might be, you know, he might be the breadwinner of the family, but then looking at medical ethics,
It's not permitted for a pregnant woman to donate blood. It's not permitted. I don't think we even have extreme cases where they are allowed to, but medically, ethically, you know, it's not permitted for a pregnant woman to donate blood.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the way God has made us.
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah, that's the way God has made
us.
Well,
I think in such situations, they could rush to the community.
Yeah, and get other donors.
Yeah, benevolent people who can help donate.
And presently now, I think that the blood bank is always rich. For instance, a while ago, as young persons in Bamenda, we launched a blood donation campaign.
Okay.
Where we encourage young persons to go to the regional hospital and donate their blood to save lives. This blood, do you think they are just taken from there directly to people who need it? No.
Yeah.
Well, they are being banked. When people come up with emergencies, they go there, get it, and give them. So I think a lot of strategies are being put in place to arrest situations that you just situations like what you just said.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow, it's really interesting. Well, Mercy, we are equally going to take another break. Yeah, we'll get another break to catch our breath. And when we come back, we are going to talk about some of the things that women and girls should know, especially in the health domain, and equally talk a little about the quote of the day.
Okay. Today's woman knows no fear but is limited by respect and dignity. Today's woman has virtue and accomplishment has become a fashion trend. Despite the fact that some women still feel limited, unfit and unimportant, yet only today's woman has the keys to completely redeem her peers and society by preaching against excesses and restoring dignity.
Today's women, they need to be God-fearing, God-loving, and they need to be virtuous women, that is hardworking and industrious. And they need to be supportive to their husband, to their children, family, and the community as a whole.
Cameroon woman of today is not like the one yesterday. Not that we've been changed biologically, we are who we are. But we have now, I think we have been emancipated to a level that we think we can stand ourselves. Compare with the men, but not overthrowing the men, we know they are ahead of us.
I can see that today's woman is really an evolved woman. It's no longer a woman who thinks that the best she can do is be in the kitchen and cook for the husband. She's a woman who is more assertive. And I can see that they too, they are doing their best to make sure that their rights are respected.
I see today's woman as a woman who brings love, comfort, peace and prosperity in home and in society.
One thing I believe God is that God has put so much into women that if they submit themselves under the care and under the hand and the leadership of God, God will use them to build the community that we desire in our time. In Jesus' name.
Welcome back, dear listeners. If you are just joining us, you are on Today's Woman on Foundation Radio FM 100.0, and we are broadcasting from the My 6 neighborhood in Bamenda, Cameroon. And we have been talking extensively to Mrs. King Mercy Tetu, an epidemiologist, and she is the CEO of Value Health Africa. She's a member of the 2016 Mandela Washington Fellowship. She has been one-time lecturer at Florence Nightingale Biomedical Institute, one-time lab director. She is a researcher. She is a program coordinator, and we have been talking excessively about some of the challenges that women face in health, in every other domain, in every other aspect. And this time around, Mercy, we want to talk to women. We want you to tell women some of the things they should know or some of the things they should be doing. For example, training their children on this reproductive health, menstruation. Yeah, let's hear directly from a health expert.
Well, I always go back to my experiences in the community because I do a lot of community work. I remember we organized the menstrual hygiene education in Bambalang, where we went to the technical school in Bambalang and spoke to the young girls on menstrual hygiene. There we realized that 95% of these girls don't have access. That's 95% of these girls don't have access to sanitary pads. I mean, 95%.
And so how were they coping?
Some of them told us that we actually used questionnaires and guided them to fill. Some they used funny things like foams, loins. Some said leaves. I don't know how.
Is Bambalang too rural?
Yeah, it's a rural community.
Unfortunately, I've not been there.
Yeah, it's a rural community.
Okay.
Yeah. So we spoke to some of these girls, and that is what these girls do use. You know, I would not like to disclose the particular place, the particular institution, but it was mind blowing. I was like, what? It still happens, you know. And I don't want to tune it to maybe their parents are not educating them enough. What if they are copying this from their parents?
Yeah.
You know, before a child goes to pick up a foam to use, maybe the mom has been using the foam.
Or why not? Maybe the mom doesn't even know. Some children hide it and resort to using some funny kind of things because they are actually scared. They don't know what is happening.
It will be very surprising to hear that I went to another community and I was working on, we're doing a cervical cancer screening examination in another community. And there we are screening women of age 25 years and above. I tell you, on my questionnaire, because I like evidence-based policy, you know, or need-based research, and I do it with questionnaires.
Okay.
And we do data analysis at the end of the day. We realize that many of these women that were screened do not even use sanitary pads as well. Most of them use the same things these girls filled.
Oh my.
So at the end of the day, you can't give up, you can't give out what you don't have. So I think it's a call for attention. It's our duty as community educators to bring all those women together, both young and old, to educate them on reproductive health issues.
Certainly. So there's some health issues or risk involved if they have to use things like leaves and foams. We all know it can be nasty because they are not really good enough.
Yeah.
Are there other health risks?
Yes, of course they are. Should some of these particles migrate to their internal system, what becomes of them? They start having some infections, some complications and all that.
Yeah.
You know, we are even still struggling to get the risk factors associated to cervical cancer. Who knows?
Yeah.
So the real cause of cancer has not been proven. But some of these particles that migrate to their system, who knows? You know, and at the end of the day, they have infections like staphylococcus infections. They have, you know, funny infections. Where are they coming from? The poor menstrual management. So we think that it's a call for concern. We have to talk to these young persons. We have to talk to the mothers.
To the mothers.
Yeah. But I think in the urban areas, it's different. In the urban areas, it's different. True. Because an average child at least has 100 or 200 francs to take to school. Even if the parent does not care about, you know, that the child can afford by keeping just 100 francs to buy the pad at the end of the day. But my concern is with the rural communities. But poor enough, these rural communities are being neglected by how they call them, by people who intervene, by interveners. They are being neglected.
Competent authorities.
Yes. They assess the target areas that are so accessible to them.
Who already
fine.
Who do not even need such things.
You see them go to schools like GBHS, Bamenda, distributing parts and all that. To me, take this thing to a rural community where these people don't even know. And lucky enough, we have one of our Mandela Washington fellows by name Comfort, who is working on reusable pads. She's actually part of my team when it has to do with menstrual hygiene. She teaches these girls on how to use these reusable pads and maintain the hygienic condition of these pads.
Yeah.
At least that's better if they cannot
and
afford.
It's sustainable.
So I think that this is a laudable initiative too for these girls. And we are actually organizing workshops where these girls can be trained on how to produce these parts all by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's a problem both for the young persons and for the mothers in the rural communities. Mm-hmm. So it's a call for concern for educators, community educators,
mm-hmm.
to take that responsibility, to talk to these people, to talk to these persons,
mm-hmm.
you know.
But I still think, especially in the urban centers, mothers still neglect their girls somehow. Some children or some girls resort to using, just living their lives, learning especially from schools, learning from films, and many even pay less attention to the growth of their children. And so at times you see girls living some kind of funny lives, even dating at some kind of funny ages, trying so many things because they really lack some of this motherly education. Yeah, so I think mothers equally have a big role to play.
That's right, because the day a woman starts menstruating, a girl starts menstruating, is a very terrifying day and traumatizing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember that if I didn't have that mother child relationship with my mom, I wouldn't have told her.
You begin to wonder.
Yeah. I remember a friend, I met her some days ago, and I just told her that, remember what happened in Form 2? She laughed out. She told me that she can remember because we were in school together when we were in Form 2. She was older than I was, and she started menstruating. The day she saw her menses, she walked up to me. I was the friend. She walked up to me and told me that something just happened and I don't know what to do. I never had any education on menstrual hygiene and all that. She also was blank. We went behind the class. Suddenly, she ended up using one funny cloth on something. And lucky enough for her, she had a very good, a cordial relationship with her mom.
Mm-hmm.
She went and told her mom, and they got her all the necessary stuff to manage her menses. And likewise with me, when I went and told my mom, she actually gave me the education. If you meet with a man after this, you know, you'll be pregnant. Even if you are not pregnant, you acquire HIV AIDS.
Yeah, someone has just got the extra mile to say, even if they touch you,
if a boy just calls, don't even turn, you know, and all that.
They actually even scare the children.
Children, yeah. But I think we should give them the right information and tell them what actually menses is all about and teach them how to manage their menses and even teach them how to put their parts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to wear
the right
them properly, the right way.
Yeah, and in hygienic conditions.
Conditions. And where to dispose these parts.
Certainly.
Yeah, so the mothers are the first educators at home for this.
Well, our time is really fast approaching. We'll briefly talk about the quote of the day as we close. It says, the question isn't who is going to let me, it's who is going to stop me, from Ayn Rand. I think I particularly love that quote and chose it because it says, it's not how much they let you, it's not how community lets you, it's not how your husband or whoever, it is who is going to stop me from being what I want to be, who is going to stop me from delivering what I want to deliver to my community. And so it goes on and on.
That takes me back to a community where I went to, and I met just this little girl. She's a lone child in the Department of Electricity, and the guys always made her feel very uncomfortable, but she had this quote in her mind, I believe, and even though she never had a new uniform, she never had a pair of uniforms, she never had a pair of shoes to put on, she never had school fees, she took her bag and came to school.
Wow.
And during our visit, because we are actually awarded two scholarships to the best the girls in STEM in a technical school in Bambalang. So when going there to see these girls with my Mandela Washington Fellowship team, we decided to enroll her. Yes. Because nobody stopped her.
Yeah, nothing is going to stop her.
She believed in herself, even though she's the lone girl in electricity. She believed she could make it, and she will make it. And she's presently the best in that class, even amongst her peers who are male.
Wow, it's really quite interesting. We hope many more girls do not feel limited. Nah. Nobody should stop
you.
Them.
Yeah,
yeah. They should not wait who is going to let them.
Yeah.
But they should take up that spirit of who is going to stop them. We want to thank you very much, Kien Mercy Tetu. It was really a pleasure, and it was interesting talking to you. We thank you so much for coming.
It's an honor being here and talking to a dynamic woman like yourself, you know.
Okay, thank you too very much. We want to thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us throughout the program. It really was great pleasure having you. Julius Tendong was the one assisting us throughout the program, and supervision was coming in from station manager Mokon Johnny Nelson. And for presentation, I have been Ranibel Santowara, thanking you immensely for your attention and for staying with us. Have a blessed day in the company of our program.
Bye-bye.
Bye.